All right, welcome to session two. Here we go. If you're listening back, I forgot to turn it on, so you missed a couple minutes, but it's okay. But so we're going to spread out and kind of reflect and give you some time to build your testimony. But I want to start just by telling you guys my story. Since you came back for the second session, you get to know me a little bit better. Congratulations. Way to come back. So my story, my name is Brad. I was born in Bellevue, Nebraska. Are any of my people that said they had ever been to Lincoln still in the room? Lincoln, Nebraska. All right, they all left. They didn't. Man, we were going to be a family. They betrayed us. Anyone here a Cornhusker fan?
My son went to the university.
Okay, all right. Cornhusker is the University of Nebraska's mascot. The crazy thing about Nebraska, everywhere you go, everybody is a Cornhusker fan because it's the one sports team we have. We don't have pro teams. We only have one major university. Everybody's a Cornhusker fan. Everywhere you go, everybody wears Cornhusker gear. I was going to come here because I always make Cornhusker jokes in Nebraska. Weird thing about Missouri, y'all are kind of all over. Got like Cardinals fans, but you got some Cubs fans that sneak in. We're Cardinals fans, by the way, for those of you who are Cardinals fans. We're Cardinals fans. We're going to the game tonight, actually. So you got like Missouri, some Kansas people sneak in, some K-State. So it's just not the same. But anyways, I was born in Bellevue, Nebraska. My dad was a Nazarene pastor my entire life. So I grew up going to church, going to district assembly, going to general assembly. My dad was the NY president for a while, so I went to like teen camp as like a two-year-old because my mom had to do stuff and I just followed her around. So I grew up like the churchiest of churched kids. And when I was 4 years old, I asked Jesus into my heart. And this is going to be a throwback for some of you, and this is also going to be a shock from some of you. Does anybody know who this is? This is Salty the Psalm Book. Salty the Psalm Book was Christian Barney. Okay? It was like a TV show and a guy, and he went through the book of Psalms and like taught kids about who he was because he was the psalm book and stuff. This is what he looked like on the TV show. But if you were lucky, you got to go see him in live action. And this is what he looked like live action. Super cool, huh? So that is Salty the Psalm Book. And when I was 4 years old, I went with my parents to a general assembly in Indianapolis, Indiana. And they took me to a Salty the Psalm Book concert where I got to see this guy live and in person. And now I'm somewhere in the crowd. He's giving me the peace signs. That's towards me in that picture. And I left that concert and I looked up at my mom. And I said, Mom, I want to invite Jesus into my heart. I don't remember anything that was said at that concert. I don't remember anything that happened. But I remember looking at my mom and saying that. And then she talked to me like little four-year-old me. And I was like, oh, that is the most precious thing ever. I love you so much. Let's pray this prayer. You know this, what this means. All that stuff. And I accepted Jesus into my life at 4 years old. But the reality was I was 4 years old. So I didn't know completely what that meant, but my parents would tell you that my behavior radically shifted after that. So I knew a little bit about what that meant, I guess. But so I grew up a Christian. I have very few memories of not following Jesus, of not being involved in church. But as I grew up, I found identity in other things. You see, as I grew up, I was always worshiping the God, kind of my family's God, the God that my parents worshipped. It never really became real to me or personal to me. And when I was in high school, my identity was completely around basketball. Raise your hand if you're an athlete in here. Oh, that's what's up. We got way more. So my youth group right now, we have no athletes. It's the worst for me because one athlete. Who? Oh yeah, we got one athlete. Elijah is an athlete. We got a lot of theater kids and band kids and choir kids, and they're awesome. I love them, but we need some athletes, because that's where I have fun, because I was an athlete. But my identity was in basketball, so I have to pull up pictures, because I'm 5'10" and white, so when I tell people I was a good basketball player, they give that reaction. Like, that girl right there, as soon as I said basketball, she went, like, yeah, right, this guy. So my identity was in basketball, which is crazy. I got put in this room because I'm way more comfortable right here than on like a stage or anything. So God works in mysterious ways. But my identity was completely in basketball. And I wasn't like amazing. I wasn't like the best player in our state or anything. But I was pretty good. We won a state championship in Nebraska in the Class A, which Nebraska does their classes weird, so A is like 6A. It's the biggest class. They go A, B, C, D, E, yeah, down, alphabetical instead of 1A, 2A, all the way. So in the biggest class, but my identity was completely in that, and I loved it. I was cool with it. Like, in my high school, I was the basketball star. That's what people knew me as. They didn't know me as the Christian or as a Jesus follower. I was all that, but what I pushed first and what people saw me as first was Brad, the basketball player. And I was actually good enough to get some college scholarships at some NAIA schools and like low-level D2s and stuff, which was awesome. And I was going to move or continue on that path of basketball and my identity being in that. So I committed to play basketball at a university in my hometown called Grace University, which I ended up not going to. We'll get to that later, but God saved me because that university shut down. So I wanted to have been there all 4 years anyways, but I would have no student loans. So maybe God didn't save me, because if your school shuts down, you don't have to pay them. But I committed to Grace University, and I was going to get a stay in my hometown with the same crowd I had grew up with. I was going to get to play basketball, and I was still a Christian. I was still following Jesus. I hadn't like turned my back. I hadn't betrayed. I hadn't gone down a different path, but my identity was beginning to wrap completely around basketball. So the summer after my senior year, I was committed to play basketball at Grace. I went to our Nebraska District summer camp, and then I went to NYC, which, if you're going to NYC this year, raise your hand. Ooh, all right, y'all are blessed and highly favored, because your NYC is in Tampa, Florida. Mine, Louisville, Kentucky. You know what's in Louisville, Kentucky?
Kentucky.
One arena that we did everything in. There's no beach. We didn't get to go to the beach. We didn't get to go on dinner cruises, get on a speedboat. No, we did. We went to the arena. Went to the services. After the services, you know what we did? We sat outside the arena, ran through a fountain that was out there. There was nothing fun to do in Louisville. I got to go to NYC twice, after my eighth grade year and after my senior year. Guess where the one after my eighth grade year was? Louisville, Kentucky. I got to go to two in the same place. Y'all are blessed. You get to go to Florida and enjoy the beach. But I went to NYC. There wasn't anything said. There wasn't a service that led me to this. There wasn't an encounter with anyone that led me to this. But there was a moment, because I was away from everything that I was comfortable with, everything that was familiar to me. I was away from my normal crowd. I was out of my hometown. I was away from basketball for this 7-week period, and I gave God room to speak in my life. And He spoke to me, and He said, "Brad, I want you to leave that all behind." And I felt God calling me to Mid-America Nazarene University. Raise your hand if you've ever been to MNU in Olathe, Kansas. That's what's up. Here's a little background on my story. Every fiber of... You got the MNU shirt on. That's what's up. You go there right now? All right. We're about to get real then. Here's my background growing up. I said this in front of DT before, so he knows, so it's all good. But every fiber of my being did not want to go to MNU. Okay, I had three... Dude, we're connecting. Everything I'm saying, you got to talk to this girl afterwards, Carly. I had three older siblings that had all gone to MNU. Okay, so I didn't want to follow them. I didn't want to do the same thing. I had grown up going to MNU. It was just like a me thing. I didn't want to go there, but I felt God calling me away from basketball, away from Grace University, and calling me towards MNU. So I left NYC. Here's a little side picture for you. NYC, that's where I met Carly. That is our first picture ever together at the KFC Yum Center at NYC. That's, I promise you, back in the day, neon shorts with neon socks, cool, cool. I was cool. I know today that's not the style, but I was cool. I also want to direct your attention to the caption. Okay, 18-year-old Brad, just graduated high school, met this beautiful young woman at NYC, took a picture with her. Fellas in the crowd, here's a life lesson. Shoot your shot, okay? I posted this on Instagram. Low-key met my future wife, okay? First picture, posted that. She may not have thought it was as cute as I thought it was, but she married me a couple years later anyways. So, shoot your shot, speak it into existence. Do that, fellas, this summer when you meet your wife at NYC. That's my plug. Kayla's not in here, so I'm allowed to say that. But so, anyways, I left NYC, felt like God was calling me in this different direction. Took about a week, just prayed about it, talked to some mentors in my life, and just felt like that's where God was calling me to go, but was really seeking some confirmation. And what ended up happening, this is really high this time, so. What ended up happening is I woke up to do my devotional one day, and I opened it, and it was about Jonah. Not wanting to go to Nineveh and getting swallowed by a fish. Yeah. And in that moment, I decided, I do not want to get swallowed by a fish. So I decided, you know what, I'll go to my Nineveh, the place I didn't want to go, but like, God, I trust you to move, and I'll trust you to use this in whatever way you say fit. So called my admissions counselor. Granted, this is after NYC, which is in July. College starts in August, you know, not a lot of people are making their final college decision a week before classes, but that's kind of my style. I wrote these sermons last night, so that's my style, okay? So, I'm just kidding. So I called the admissions counselor from MNU and just said, like, hey, man, I don't know if this is even possible this semester. I don't know what this looks like, but I think I'm supposed to come to MNU. So tell me what I need to do. And he said, you know, dude, that's crazy, because obviously I grew up on a Nazarene district. My siblings had gone to MNU. MNU knew me. I knew MNU. I was in their system. There was kind of always this expectation I was just going to go there because it's where my family went. So he told me, this is crazy. Like, 2 days ago, we were going through and deleting all of our students that for this next semester that aren't coming anymore. And I got to your name, and I was about to delete it, and I just felt like, I'm going to leave that. Like, I'm just going to leave it. Nothing happens, but I'm going to leave that. So basically, I was enrolled in classes and ready to start college at MNU in like 2 weeks after telling them I wasn't going to go there. So God was already preparing things for me as he was calling me towards that. So long story, kind of simmered down, but went to MNU for 4 years, graduated, married Carly in that time, and it was a great experience for me at MNU. There were definitely things that didn't go my way and I didn't enjoy, but I believe that God was preparing me in those 4 years, and he was calling me to the place I was meant to be so I could end up the place he was leading me towards. For example, had I not been at MNU, would not have got called to Connecting Point, which is the church we love, would not be here speaking to you guys today, which we just believe that God is not a God of coincidence or accidents. Like, we believe God is in the business of putting the right people in the right place at the right time. So we believe everywhere we are, God is placing us there at the right time. We believe that you're in this room because God placed you here at the right time, that you're the right people in the right place at the right time. But God had led me there. What happened my senior year of MNU is I had lived kind of this cushy life. I grew up in church, had never really like rebelled, had never had these huge trials I had to overcome, had never seen my family have to overcome any kind of struggle or trial. And in me shifting away from basketball and trusting God, I began to find my identity in Him and began to kind of make God my own God and develop a personal relationship and not just live off my family or my parents' faith. But my senior year of college, I had one semester left until I graduated. And the beginning of February, I got a call from my dad that just pretty much told me, hey, like, Mom is pretty sick. We're going to take her into the hospital, and they're going to do some tests and try to figure things out. When I was about 10 years old, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. When I was like 12, we had believed she had been cured and had completely overcome it. And 10 years later, we got this call. They took her in for some tests. What happened is her breast cancer had metastasized all over her body. Basically, what that means is she had cancer in her bones, everywhere, but it was stemmed from her breast cancer. So I got this call, so me and my brother drove home. Here's some pictures of me and my mom. So cute. Yeah, so precious. Not as cute as Luca, but still cute. So me and my brother drove home, went to the hospital, got to spend some time with my mom. And this is what we were told from the doctors, like, hey, things don't look good. She probably will never be cured from this. She isn't dying, but she will live the rest of her life with this until she ultimately does pass away. My mom was 54 years old when this was happening. So we were like, okay, we stayed for a couple days, and news was just getting worse and worse. And we left on a Wednesday, and when we left, the news was, hey guys, your mom probably has about 10 weeks to live at this point. So we left to go back. My brother has a job. Obviously, I was in school, finishing up school at MNU. So we got home that Thursday, and that Friday morning, I woke up with a call from my dad that said, hey buddy, things are looking really, really bad. You guys might want to come back. They don't know if mom will make it through the weekend. So as a 22-year-old about to graduate college, I went from no struggle or no trial in my life to, hey, your mom's going to live with this disease forever, to, hey, your mom's going to live with this disease for 10 weeks, to, hey, your mom is actively dying and you need to get home to be with her. So Carly and I packed up our bags, skipped our classes, and got on the road. We got an hour and a half down the road. My hometown is 3 hours from MNU, so we were about halfway home. And I got a call from my dad that just said, hey buddy, she's not going to be here when you get here. You guys are not going to make it on time. I got to call your brother. He's on the road too. I'll call you back in about 5 minutes, but I'm going to put her on and you need to be prepared to say goodbye to her. And I said, okay. So we kept going. I got a call about 5 minutes later. Got to talk to my mom. She wasn't responsive, so she wasn't talking to me, but I got to talk to her and just thank her for who she was, and just love her and spend time with her, and just tell her goodbye. And hung up the phone, and God had always come through for me in my life. You know, my mom had had cancer when I was 10, and we had prayed, and we believed she had been cured. My oldest sister, when I was 8 years old, had a life-threatening brain disease that took over her body, and she was hospitalized for about a month. And we were told she had a 2% chance to live, and if she lived, there was about a 1% chance that she would be normal. There was about a 99% chance she would live with severe brain damage the rest of her life. And we prayed, and she was completely cured, and it was this amazing miracle, and she's normal today. And God had never not come through for me. So the rest of the ride home, we just prayed out loud the whole way, God, you gotta save her. God, you gotta save her. God, you gotta save her. Over and over, fully believing that we would get there and God would work a miracle. What happened is we got to the hospital and we walked up the steps, and my aunts and uncles and lots of our family were sitting outside the room that my mom was in, and they were crying, and we could tell, like, we knew. And we walked in the room, and I saw my dad, and he just said, "She's gone." And I said, "Okay," and I spent about an hour in a room with the body of my mom and my dad and my three siblings, confused and angry and not understanding why God didn't come through. And I tell you this because it was the first time I ever had to really question my faith. It's the first time that my will and God's will didn't line up anymore. And I remember wrestling with this and just not understanding. And there's anger and resentment. And as I worked through it, talking with people and just diving deeper into the Word and into prayer, just trying to understand. You know, the good news is we don't have to understand everything in this world. Right? I do now. I can look back. This was about 4 years ago now. I can look back and I can say, like, with confidence, like, God 100% completely heard my prayers. And He heard everything I said, and He totally understood. And it may not make sense, but God actually answered my prayers. Right? Not the way I had wanted, not the way I had imagined, not the way I had dreamed of or thought of, but God saved my mom. My mom she has no pain, no sorrows, no sadness. He saved her. Not the way I had wanted, not the way I had imagined, but He saved her. And there's a lot of sadness and tragedy in that. And it's still, like, it's still sad today, it's still emotional, but the amazing thing is God will use every part of your story if you let Him. So what ended up happening with this is a couple weeks later, one of my friends from high school got a call that his mom's breast cancer had come back. Almost the exact same thing happened to his family. Within 2 months, my mom had died. 2 months later, his mom was diagnosed, her breast cancer metastasized all over her body. They thought she was going to live a couple more years, and she suddenly passed away. And I got to walk through that journey with him, not as just a friend who's there to support, but someone that could say, like, "Man, I'm on this with you, and we might be a little farther ahead, and I can tell you it gets better, and there's light." And we've had a cool relationship over the last 4 years as we deal with kind of similar struggles, and we can lean on each other, and God's been able to use me because he's not a follower of Jesus, and his family doesn't have the faith base that mine has, but God's been able to use me to be a light and hope in his life because of the trials and tragedy that God brought me through. And another cool story that's just come out of that is at our church now, we have a 12-year-old, a 7th grade girl, whose mom, her whole life, has been dealing with cancer of all kinds. She's had multiple brain surgeries. She's spent long stints in the hospital, and she's currently in the hospital kind of battling some different infections and diseases, and things haven't always looked great in that situation. And the cool thing is we get to love, the 7th grade girl's name is Brielle. We get to love on Brielle. And we get to live life with her, and we get to speak words of encouragement over her. And it doesn't come from a place of, "Man, we feel so sorry for you, like, we pity you so much." It comes from a place of, "We know exactly where you are. We know exactly what you're going through." And we've got to minister to her and have conversations with her that we just simply wouldn't have been able to have if we had never gone through this, if we had never experienced this trial and this struggle and this tragedy and this disappointment. We can speak real life into her, and we're helping carry her through this. And we just believe that God's going to use every part of our story, that God will use the good and God will use the bad. God will use the wins and God will use the losses. And we're just encouraged by that. And one more thing I want to share on that is my wife Carly is amazing. She's awesome. She's way better than me at every single thing you could ever imagine, except for Mario Kart. I'm way better at Mario Kart. She's better than me at Mario Kart. Not on the mushroom course. Yeah, that's true. But Carly is amazing, and a couple years ago, Carly went through some real like struggle and tragedy, and it's not my story to share, so I won't completely share it with you, but just some real brokenness, some things that we looked at from a world perspective, and we saw hurt, and we saw heartache, and we saw brokenness, we saw incompleteness. And the amazing thing is Carly, I've been able to watch from a distance and from close, Carly be able to take young women and young girls who are going through similar trials and struggles and just be a light to them and love on them. And it's been amazing to watch God use her to bring people closer to Him, even in the midst of life not making sense, even in the midst of life not going their way. It's been amazing to watch God use her to draw people closer to Him, because where we saw brokenness, God saw restoration. And where we saw incompleteness, God saw room for Him to move in and make things complete again. And God will use the ugly and the broken and all the badness that happens in your story, in your life. God can use it if you just let Him. And I want to share a story about a couple ladies in our church. Their names are Sheila and Christina. And at Connecting Point, we do a ministry called the Second Chance Ministry. We believe that we all need a second chance. Everybody needs a second chance, and most people need more than two. But we call this ministry our Second Chance Ministry. And what we do is we go to churches, or we go to a correctional facility in Lincoln, and we pick up inmates every Sunday morning. So we pick them up. They have to be on good behavior. They have to be within 2 years of being released, I believe. And we pick them up and we bring them to church. And they get to have church with us, and they get out for 4 hours. So they come to church and we serve them lunch. And we get to just live life with them and eat lunch with them and spend time with them. And it's a really, really cool ministry. Because like on a Sunday morning, our church looks like a biker bar. Yeah. We got more face tattoos than we do people with gray hair. Yeah. Which is abnormal for a church. Right? And you walk into our church on a Sunday morning and it smells like cigarettes. Because we got people outside smoking because they don't know Jesus yet, but they're at church. And that's the kind of church we want to be. And some cool stories have come from that. So first is a lady named Sheila, who had been in prison for many, many years. She's like one of our best friends now. She actually watches Luca for us a lot when we're out of town. So we trust her with our most prized possession. Yeah. Okay? But her name's Sheila. She had been in prison for fraudulent checks and stuff. She's told me the story so many times. It's like so crazy. If you've ever seen the movie Catch Me If You Can, that's like her life story. So it's crazy. It's hard for me to be like, dang, that is, you are so cool, because it's like bad. But like, she just lived a lot of life that I have like no experience with. So she was in prison. We picked her up. She started coming to church. And the cool thing is she met Jesus. She radically turned her life around. Like, she is on fire for Jesus now. She's been released now for 2 or 3 years or something like that. And she is at church every single Sunday serving on some ministry team. She serves on our tech team. She serves on our coffee team. And she now serves in our Second Chance Ministry, which was the ministry that used to serve her and pick her up and bring her to church. But she now serves. She also runs an AA meeting out of our church that she leads. And she mentors and ministers to a lot of young ladies who have lived a similar life to her, that have been in and out of the correctional system, that are dealing with family members that are in and out. And she can serve people and speak to people, and God can use her to minister to people that would never listen to me. Yeah. If I walk into a room with a bunch of criminals, They see a scrawny little white boy that they do not care what I have to say. Okay? But when someone who has lived their life and been through what they're going through and truly understands them, speaks to them, they listen, and God can use her. Even though a couple years ago people would look at her and say, she's a lost cause, God will never use her, she's too far gone. The other story is about a lady named Christina, and Christina is one of the coolest stories that we have at our church. Christina was part of our Second Chance ministry. We picked her up. She was imprisoned. She got out for a while. She was like a big-time drug dealer in our area. Like, everyone who was in the drug game knew her. And she started coming to church. She got out. She continued coming to church. And she met Jesus and decided to give her life to Jesus and has been following Jesus ever since. And sometimes we think that means now everything will go our way. Right? God's going to take care of us now. We're on the same team. But God can see things way beyond what we can see, and His plan is way bigger than we can imagine. What ended up happening is some charges from years and years and years ago got brought back up to Christina. And she was now living this amazing life, like bringing people to Jesus and bringing people to church, and she was super involved in ministry, and you wouldn't meet her and think she had ever spent a minute in a jail cell. But now she was having to go through this trial and facing this adversity that she might go to jail for 50 years for the rest of her life. And she was living this completely wholesome life now. And we met as a church and we prayed and we prayed and we prayed for God to just move and work a miracle. And her sentencing date kept getting pushed back and pushed back, which we just got told by everyone in the judicial system of the world that's a good thing. Like, if they're pushing it back, that's a good thing. They don't mind that she's out in the community and on the streets. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. And for years, it was just getting pushed back and pushed back. And we were like, God is going to work a miracle here, and He is going to use her, and He's just going to work this miracle. And what ended up happening is eventually the sentencing date stopped getting pushed back. And she got sentenced to 10 years in prison to be served in Florida. And it just made no sense to us, because here was this woman that was harming no one, and obviously in her past had made some mistakes, but was now on the right path, and she was being punished. And on her last Sunday with us before she had to go serve her sentence, we held this big luncheon and this potluck, and people got to pray over her and speak over her, and it was awesome. It was amazing. And then Christina got up to talk at the end, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever got to be a part of and see. Because here was this woman who had gave her life to Jesus. And after that, things started taking this turn, and she was going to be punished still. And God wasn't working things out for her the way she had wanted, or she had imagined, or maybe the way people had told her. But she stood up in front of a room of people that had loved on her and accepted her and brought her in. And she told them how thankful she was and how much she loved them. And she looked at us and said, the amazing thing is that a lot of people would look at this and see, like, God turning His back on me, or God not coming through for me, and would see that this church is throwing this party to send an inmate off to prison for the next 10 years. And she looked at us and she said, the cool thing is we're throwing this party because God is sending a missionary to Florida for the next 10 years. Yeah. And I'm going to have opportunity in those facilities to be a light where it's really, really, really dark. And I'm going to be an example where there are no examples to look to. And I'm going to get to tell people about Jesus who will listen to me because I've been where they are. And this is just a woman that people would look at from the outside and say God will never use her. She's a major drug dealer in a major city. She's hurt a lot of people. She's been in a lot of bad situations, but God came through and saw a vessel to bring people closer to Him. And God will use the bad and the brokenness in her story, and God will use the victory in her story. And we just believe Christina is going to impact hundreds and thousands of women in the state of Florida's correctional department. And we believe that there will be revival coming out of those facilities, that there won't be inmates or criminals walking out those doors eventually. There will be missionaries and pastors and preachers and leaders and people on fire for Jesus, because God is a God that'll use things that make no sense to us. God is a God that has way bigger dreams and goals and visions than we do, and God will use the brokenness in your story. There's one more story I want to share about a good friend of mine. His name's Cade Johnson. He's a wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks. We went to high school together. We were pretty good friends in the first couple years of high school. Cade was like the coolest of the cool. Okay, Cade was the guy. Maybe. He might be in that basketball picture somewhere, but I don't know. He's the coolest of cool. He's like the guy all the guys wanted to be friends with. He was the girl, or the guy all the girls wanted to date. Just super cool, super nice, super funny, super good looking kid. Obviously super athletic. He is now in the NFL. But Cade was like a big time partier our first couple years of high school. He was out he's drinking and doing drugs and hanging out with girls that do those things and doing things with those girls that do those things that you're not supposed to do. And he was just kind of living that, what society paints as like an ideal life of an athlete. And what happened is, our junior year, Cade got invited to a church retreat by one of our friends. And he went, and Cade got saved at that weekend retreat. And he came back a totally different person. Totally different. What happened is all the people that had admired him and wanted to hang out with him and that were at parties with him, drinking and doing drugs, and all the girls that wanted to be with Cade, all of a sudden didn't like this new Cade that was all about Jesus and wasn't doing the things they do and wasn't hanging out with him anymore. And I watched this kid go from like the coolest kid in our high school that everybody wanted to hang out with to a complete loner that had nobody in his corner. And me and Cade, obviously, we were close. We played sports together, and he knew I was a Christian, so we really connected those last 2 years when kind of everyone else turned his back on him. And the cool thing is Cade never went back. Like, I remember there were moments I was looking at him, and I was looking at this kid who, like, had everything that the world would tell you wanted, to now he was like, had nothing. Like, he would have this amazing game on a Friday night and sit in the locker room by himself with no one talking to him and nobody wanted to be around him. And I remember thinking, like, man, if that was me, I think I'd go back. Like, I think I would turn my back on Jesus and go back. Like, I don't know if I could do it. And the amazing thing is Cade never did. Obviously, Cade went to play football at South Dakota State. He's now in the NFL with the Seahawks. Kind of has had an underdog story his whole life. He's awesome. But it's amazing now because Cade gets to speak at FCA conventions. And Cade obviously has an influence and an impact on a lot of young athletes because of the position that God has now placed him in. And it's amazing to watch God use him in that role. And Cade can connect and can minister and can reach people that would never listen to me. Right? There are people that automatically look up to him because of his position, because of his title, and he can use that for the glory of God. So I tell you all these stories just to remind you that each story is unique, and God wants to reach everybody. And there is something unique in your story that God wants to use to reach people in your life, to reach people that you may not have even met yet. And it might be a victory, it might be a triumph, it might be a tragedy, it might be some bad decisions or some addictions that God has rescued you from, it might be a position or a title that God is going to place you in. But God wants to use you to reach people. And all you have to do is allow him. And the amazing thing about reaching people is that the pressure is off us. Like, when I am talking to someone, when I talk to one of my friends about Jesus, or if we're out at the grocery store and we start a conversation with someone, the pressure's off us because we don't save people. I'm not good enough to save anyone. If I was going around having to save people, nobody would get saved because I can't do it. But the cool thing is, I can tell my story and I can love on people and I can be as much of a light as I can be, and God can use that to save people. And God will use you if you're just willing to work and commit. If you're willing to get a little uncomfortable, get out of your comfort zone and have a conversation. If you're willing to be an example, if you're willing to be different, God will use you. And whether you're a prodigal son returning, or whether you're the son who never left, God will use you. I can relate to people that Sheila and Christina and Cade can never relate to. I've had lots of conversations with some young men and women who see the stories that get glorified that we just talked about, the great overcoming stories and the return stories and the leaving this life of addictions and bad decisions and coming back to God. And they see all those get talked about and glorified, but they don't know where they fit in the story of God because they've never had those. They got saved. They grew up in the church. They have a good family. They were saved when they were young, and they've never had this turning away from God moment where they come back, or this rebellion. And the amazing thing is, I can say, God can use you. God can use that. There are people that need to hear that story. We need to glorify that story of consistency. God will use your story, whether you're the prodigal son returning, whether you're in a position of title, whether you're the son who never left, whether you have a history of bad decisions, of addictions, of whatever you have, God will use it to reach somebody, and He wants to use it to reach somebody if you're willing to get uncomfortable. So we want to give you about 10 minutes. I'll try and get this slide up there if I can. About 10 minutes to, if you have a notebook or a journal, to spend some time journaling, if you just want to get your phone out and do it on your phone. We want to give you some time to reflect on your life and where you've seen God move and things God has rescued you from, things God has kept you from, things God has brought you through, ways God has used you. We just want to give you some time to help develop your testimony and your story. So we have some prompts that will get up on the screen. That can just kind of help get people started. But we want, our goal here is that you leave here prepared to share your story with people. Like, prepared to go to the grocery store and meet someone and tell them about Jesus by telling them about your story and it being normal, or to tell a friend or a loved one your story and what God has done in your life. So we want to give you time to develop that, and then in our next session, we're going to get real uncomfortable. So most of you won't come back, but we'll get real uncomfortable, and we're going to practice a little bit. So we'll get some music playing, some nice, you know, that nice piano instrumental reflected music that we play when we do stuff like this in the church. We'll get that going, but you guys can stay where you're at, or if you want to go sit at a table or space out, we'll just give you about 10 minutes, and then I'll come up and pray, and we'll close out this session.